Welcome to Ecclesia Hattiesburg's socially distanced public meeting. Excited that you guys are joining us right now. I think I should probably first start off by apologizing to any of our regular Ecclesia Hattiesburg members for starting on time, because I know that's not generally what we do. So I apologize for starting right at 5. That's not something we're accustomed to. We don't do a whole lot of that, but I guess we don't really have a good excuse since we're not all having good conversations out there in the vestibule. Is that what you call it? Before the service. So I'm just happy that we're getting a chance to still do this. I want to give a couple of things for you guys that are part of Ecclesia Hattiesburg. I see a bunch of you jumping on here. Next week, hopefully by next week, we'll have some things in place and we'll have some conversations with you guys. It looks like this is going to be a couple month kind of deal where we're not going to be able to get together in person. And so the good news for us at Ecclesia is that there is probably, I don't know if you could be better positioned as a church to do this kind of thing than we are. We don't own a building to worry about, so we don't have a mortgage note to take care of. But we do want to stay connected to you guys in a more personal way than just me talking and you guys watching once a week. So we're working on some ways of doing some smaller group kind of things via video conference and maybe even some smaller group meetings in ways that are appropriate and socially distanced out there. So we're having all those conversations. We are thinking about it and trying to think of the best way to continue to be the church together and continue doing this. I also did realize last week we had a lot of people that jumped in and watched this that don't have any idea who we are. So just to give you a real quick thumbnail sketch, Ecclesia Hattiesburg is in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. We are a church that's not affiliated with any particular denomination. Have a wide variety of folks that come. Ecclesia is a Greek word. So if you're reading in the Bible and you see the word church in English in the New Testament, that's translated from the Greek word ekklesia. And what ekklesia literally means is the called out ones. And we've taken that as our name because we believe church is something we're called out to go and do. It's something we're to be in the world, not just a time of the week or not just something that we need to do religiously and not just a building, but it is something that we are. It's a living, breathing thing. And so we are a little unusual. We're set up a little differently than probably the traditional church. It is something that if you are in the Hattiesburg area and you don't have a community you're connected to, know that you are welcome to join us in person, if and when we ever get to do that again, and connect with us otherwise if you can. So we're just excited to have you guys watch and have to be a part of it. We also are big and involved in local schools. We're going to post a link underneath this for the Neighbors at Hawkins program. That's a way that we've been serving the school district for 13 years now, and some things happen through the Neighbors at Hawkins program. And so if you are looking for a way to connect, we will be happy to keep you up to date, even in this weird time we're in right now, how we can maybe serve our public schools. And I know they'll be doing meals and doing some other things for anyone under 18, I believe is what I heard this week. And so if there's opportunities for us to serve, we're going to let you guys know about it through that. So keep your eye on everything, and we're going to keep going and trying to find some new ways to creatively do this whole church thing from a distance. So I wanted to ask you to again continue praying for a friend of ours, a good friend of mine, which is Steve Ramp, still in the hospital. Some progress this week, but slow progress after a really nasty fall. And so he's in the ICU. We want to keep praying for the Ramp family. Another friend of a lot of ours, the Caminita family, baby Slayton, had to go to the hospital to get some antibiotics or get some things done for some kind of eye infection or something. I don't know exactly what it is. They feel good about the prognosis, but this is just a scary time to be going in and out of hospitals and stuff. So if you guys will be praying for the Caminita family as well. We are in this time where we were going through the Lord's Prayer, and we'll get back to it. I promise we'll get back to it. And we were going through that, but as we just all of a sudden were no longer able to meet in person, as all of us had our lives so kind of weirdly interrupted, it just occurred to me last week that it's just a good time to talk about the desert, right? This is, of course, the time of Lent that we are in the Christian calendar. The time of Lent is the time when we remember Jesus going into the desert for 40 days, where his identity is really finally kind of, I don't know, it's like a solidifying of the calling before he does his public ministry, which is, of course, a reflection of the Exodus, right? The Old Testament, for those of us that are in the Christian tradition, the Old Testament story of God rescuing the Israelites from Egypt. And so it's this idea of kind of being forced out into the desert, and it just seemed, I mean, you know, I was a little bit worried about, you know, what am I going to give up for Lent? And some of you are probably doing this 3 weeks ago when a different world was happening, right? Oh, how am I going to live without sugar for 40 days? Or how am I going to give up coffee for 40 days or whatever? And now all of us have been forced in this position where it's like we're giving up way more than we planned on giving. I don't know if this is not the most eloquent way of saying it, but I think I told Sarah yesterday, this is like the lentiest Lent, you know, I've ever lented, if that's the right use of that. There's so many things. I mean, everything is up in the air right now. And so we want to kind of take advantage of this time to consider what the desert means for us as people of faith, what the desert meant for those coming out of Egypt, what the desert could mean for us during this time. And so last week we talked about this, and the first thing we said was, just kind of, we reflected on the strangeness of the idea that God would save to the desert, right? Just the idea that, again, if you're going to save me from something, I'd rather it not be to a desert, right? So God saves from slavery into the desert. And we thought about why the desert? Why do we need something like that to happen here? Why can't they just go straight to a promised land? Why can't it just be milk and honey? Why can't they just overthrow Egypt and they become the ones that are then oppressing someone else? And the truth is that God was trying to form them into a new people, and our identities, who we are as people, that work is not done easily, right? Our identities die hard. They don't like to go away. And so it seems that God needs to take them, or God desires to take them to a place where they have to completely rethink who they are, where they have to completely try to consider, what does it really mean to be the people that they are, and to be the Israelites. And you got to remember, for generations now, they've only been slaves. Slavery is all they've known. Slavery is their identity. It's who they are. And so God takes them to this place where slavery is essentially irrelevant, right? Being in the desert, there's no place more relevant for slavery than the desert. There's nothing to farm. There's nothing to do. He takes them to this place, and he's trying to reform who they are. Trying to make them into God's people, to God's kind of people. To use the language of the Lord's Prayer we've talked about recently, to create kind of a kingdom that looks more like God's kingdom instead of the kingdom of this world. And so we see that happening. And even really, if you skip ahead in Exodus to chapter 21, when they are finally out of the desert and then God has given them these rules for living, there's a section on slavery. And to our modern ears, I would love the section on slavery to just be like one sentence, like, don't do it, it's bad, that's it. And it doesn't do that. It would be a little easier if it did. But in the ancient culture, it does make this huge step towards what we will eventually see fully realized in Jesus, which is the full humanity of all people. But what we see is what becomes more like an indentured servanthood, right? So someone, if they're in need, they can essentially sell themselves to someone for 6 years. But on the seventh year, that Sabbath year, they're forgiven and they're set free. And so even just the idea, the concept of slavery gets changed in the desert for them. So God brings them out there to change who they are. God brings them out there to get them to consider their lives as their lives have always been, to rethink the thing that is just a given now for them. But as I was going back through this week and reading throughout the narrative, I only made it a couple verses. It's really professional. It's all of us televangelists do that. You only have to go a couple verses to see that the desert, even no matter how redemptive it might be intended to be, no matter how much a vehicle of salvation it's intended to be, it is hard, and we don't accept it, and we don't like it. Right away in the story, you see this happening. And so if you just look in Exodus 16, and you just look at verses basically 2 and 3, maybe the second half of verse 1, 2 and 3, it says this. It says they set out on the 15th day of the second month after they had left the land of Egypt. The whole Israelite community complained against Moses and Aaron in the desert. The Israelites said to them, "Oh, how we wish that the Lord had just put us to death while we were still in the land of Egypt. There we could sit by the pots of cooking meat and eat our fill of bread. Instead, you have brought us to the desert to starve this whole assembly to death." Right? So there's like three things happening here that I think are important for us to consider as we are entering this time of desert. And honestly, I think if you're like me, you're going to see a little bit of yourself in the way the Israelites handled this little new scenario. And the first thing is, right away, the whole community cries out. Everybody's mad. Everybody's mad, right? And consider, I mean, just consider for a second what has happened in the story before this. God has heard the cries of his people who are oppressed, who are enslaved, and they're begging God for help, right? God has heard the cries of the people. God sends a messenger who will confront the greatest kingdom the world's ever known, biggest army the world's ever known. There ends up plague after plague after plague after in miracles and signs and plagues, all these things to convince the Pharaoh to let them go, right? Then as they leave and the army changes, the army pursues them, the sea opens up, they walk through the middle on dry ground, the sea swallows up the army behind them, drowning the most potent army in the entire world right behind them. I mean, that's a lot of things to have had happen. And then right away, what have you done? Why are we here? Why don't you love us? I mean, what does a God have to do for people to show that he loves them, right? I mean, what more does God have to do to demonstrate some care and concern and a desire for deliverance? And yet right away, man, they're just complaining, they're complaining, they're complaining. Because in the desert, and this is important for us, in the desert, our memories get short. We forget. We forget everything that we have already been through. We forget everything we've been delivered from. We forget all the good news that has happened up to this point. Our world gets shaken. We get disoriented. We get angry. And our memories get short. There's a lot of memory problems. And there's a second kind of memory problem we'll talk about in a minute in the desert. And so that's what you see from these folks. And it's easy for us to say as we're reading the narrative. But they get in this moment and they forget everything that God has done for them already. So the first thing they do is they all cry out. They forget what God has already done to deliver them. Second thing, and this quote is really funny to me, and sad but funny. The quote is, you saved us, not a quote, you saved us to kill us. So that's the working theory. The working theory is that you delivered us from Egypt to bring us out here and starve us to death. And this is one of my favorite parts of the way the Israelites blow it in this situation. Because you have this entire story of Exodus, and then they come up with this explanation for what's going on, right? And don't get me wrong, I at least occasionally like a good conspiracy theory. They're fun. They make for more interesting explanations of things that sometimes are just very normal. There doesn't need to be a fancy explanation for it, and people invent crazy conspiracy theories. And I like them. They're usually harmless and they're usually a lot of fun. But that's not always the case. And that's not always how they function. In fact, I think we can all admit in our first few weeks of the desert that we are in as a country and as a culture, we've had some conspiracy theories already, right? That have come up out of this. And I'm not going to go into them, but there's been some doozies. And I would tell you more about those conspiracy theories that have come up around this whole thing. And what is the really virus? And is it a coincidence that all this? I would tell you more about it, but I've unfollowed all the people that have been posting on it. So, which is one of the real gifts of the desert, right? I've really slimmed down who I'm following on social media. But when you get into the desert, when you get into these times where we're fearful and we're scared and we don't know what's next and life as we understand it has gone away, just watch for the conspiracy theories. Watch for the ways, the creative ways in which we will throw anybody and everybody under the bus. We will tell any story that makes us the innocent victim. We will we'll do anything like that, right? And the stuff we've seen the last couple weeks has really demonstrates how we do that when we get in the desert. And in this situation, it's every bit as absurd as stuff I've heard the last couple weeks. The theory here that they're coming up with is that God sent this unlikely hero face down Egypt, did signs and miracles, opened up the sea, split it open, swallowed up the army behind them, all so he could starve them to death in the desert. Because that makes so much sense. That the God of the universe, who could just have, you know, I mean, he demonstrated through the plagues, he's got very creative ways of going after people if he wants to, right? And instead, they come up with this idea that God is taking them out to the desert to starve them to death. And in the desert, we are always tempted. One, we have short memories. We forget what God has done for us. Two, we are always tempted to believe in the stories that make us the victims and make others the villains. We're always tempted to scapegoat. We're always tempted to find someone and something to blame for that which makes us uncomfortable or that which we don't like. We're conspiracy theorists in the desert. Again, I think we've seen that. And even if you haven't bought in, that's good televangelist speak. Even if you have not bought into some of the big conspiracy theories that are going on out there right now, you've looked for people to blame in the last couple weeks. I have. We all love a good villain that makes us feel better about ourselves. And so we got to be wary of that tendency, right? To forget the good things that God has done. And second, to scapegoat, to believe in and produce these stories, these conspiracy theories that make us the victim and scapegoat someone else. So those are the first two things we see happen. And I recognize a little bit of myself in both of those. And the third one is probably what I'm the most guilty of. And the third one, as they're moving through this list, they're crying out, they're upset, they have this conspiracy theory that God has delivered them in the desert just to kill them. Then all of a sudden, they wax poetic about the life they just came from. Oh, the slavery we used to have, right? There were pots cooking meat and all the bread I could eat. It's a very interesting way to talk about slavery. It's a very interesting way for people to speak who have been for generations crying out to God for deliverance. Meat in every pot, all the bread you can eat. I mean, this sounds like an advertisement that Egypt would have written for the cultures it wanted to overtake, right? Come be a part of Egypt's kingdom. All the food, all the meat you can eat, all the bread that'll fill your belly. Come be part of the Egyptian dream, right? And then the small print that runs across the bottom and someone says real quick at the end, right? Generations of slavery and oppression may be required for the food. Whatever the thing might be. But now all of a sudden, the people of Israel who've been crying out for deliverance have this twisted way of remembering the life they just came from. Oh, the good life of slavery. Oh, the good life, right? All right, so here's confession time. And you can even, I'm trying not to pay attention to the comments because I'm ADD and easily distracted. But who can maybe even give a thumbs up or raise the hand or do whatever emoji goes with it and confess that you're like me and you have been doing this a lot in the last week and a half. Having a very selective memory and maybe waxing poetic about the way things were before, right? You know, 3 weeks ago, you came home and you were just angry about your job and moaning about how busy you were and how things are too crazy and I don't know what I'm doing with this and this is awful and you're feeling terrible about life. And then today, you remember 3 weeks ago, and oh, there was meat in every pot and all the bread I could eat, right? It's like we just have this way of re-remembering something from the past. I've been doing that a lot, right? I've been doing that a lot. I have this nostalgic feeling for 3 weeks ago that is really unwarranted. I mean, to be it's probably too blunt to do on Facebook Live, but to just be honest, I'm kind of coming out of this season of, I won't use the word depression because I have, you know, my friends who struggle with clinical depression, it's not that, but I have these seasons every once in a while where it just kind of feels like I get a wet blanket on everything or this kind of cloud and I have a hard time coming out from underneath it. And things may be objectively wonderful in my life, beautiful kids at home and a beautiful wife and two jobs I love, not even just one, two jobs I love and meaningful work and everything is in its place. Everything should be fine, but I just can't seem to feel good about it, or I just can't seem, I struggle with what is my purpose in doing this, and things just aren't going well. And I had the conversation with Sarah a couple weeks ago about how I'm in this funk and I can't quite get out of it, and hopefully I'm coming out the tail end of it. And I mean, I wasn't like I was gloriously happy 3 weeks ago with how my life was. But if you ask me today what it was like 3 weeks ago, and oh, I mean, it was beautiful. Everything was perfect. Can you imagine how wonderful I had it 3 weeks ago, right? It's just this very selective memory. And this gets at one of the things that I think I struggle with most and I see the most in myself, and I'll start wrapping it up here in regards to what we see in the Israelites in here, is that selective memory. And what it comes from is, I think there's kind of a universal truth about humans. It's not just me. But a truth about human beings is that we are often far more in love with the demons we know than the salvation we need. Right? We're far more in love with the demons we know than the salvation we need. And that's what's happening here with the Israelites. They don't want to be slaves. They don't want to belong like cattle to another people. They don't want to be oppressed and killed and forced to work every day, all day, every day for their entire lives just for a little bit of meat and bread. They don't really want that, but it's what they know. And we tend, I think if you're anything like me, you'll confess this, we tend to go ahead and go with the things that are life-taking and that we don't really want, but we just know what it's like. We're just familiar with it. That's how we do it. And we prefer the demons we know to the salvation we need. And I'm trying hard, and I hope you will with me, try hard to not begin this desert story that we're in right now the way the Israelites began theirs. Praying and hoping that God will allow me to find in this desert, will help me to love the salvation I need more than the demons I'm accustomed to, right? Now, I'm not saying that God brought the COVID virus so that Mike could be a better human being, but I do think that God uses times like this, and I'm trying to be open to what that is. What is it? Can I learn? What can I learn in this desert time? About maybe some of the demons that I've been familiar with, but I need to get uncomfortable with. Now, I want to be very careful. I'm not telling you that you got nothing to be upset about. I'm not telling you that you shouldn't feel bad about anything. Unfortunately, the church has been fairly prolific at making people feel bad about feeling bad, and that's not the business we're in. And that shouldn't be what we're known for. It is easy as we look at the story of Israel to shake our heads a little bit at how they could make up these stories and believe this about themselves and have this selective memory about the past and glorify slavery. It's easy for us to look at the story because we have this omniscient view of the story. We're kind of reading it from God's perspective, so to speak, right? We know the beginning and the middle and the end. We know what's really going on. When we're in the middle of it, it's not that easy, right? This is hard. Sarah and I have been laughing about the idea, you know, because I think we're grieving right now, like most of you. In some ways, we're grieving, and while it may not be a person that we've lost, it's kind of a life that we've lost, at least for a time being. And you know, there's that whole Kubler-Ross 5 stages of grieving, which is number one is denial and isolation, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. Right, and Sarah and I have been laughing about the idea that I'm hitting all 5 of those every day. Like, catch me at any given point, and I'm either in denial, or I'm angry, or I'm bargaining, or I'm depressed, or I've accepted it, and I'm good with it, right? I'm just kind of running those cycles. I'm grieving this time. And so it's hard. I think it's hard. I'm so happy you put more pictures of your kids and the meals that you're making and all the positive things. Like, I like that. In fact, you can just stop with the politics and all that as far as I'm concerned. on Facebook and everything. But there is also this way that we sometimes present things like, oh, this is the best thing that's ever happened to us and we're not struggling with it at all. And that may be true for you. Don't rub it in our faces if it is. Because understand, we're all struggling, you know. Our struggle is we're suddenly homeschooling kids, and it's hard to be productive, and it's hard to do the things that we feel like we need to do on a day-to-day basis. Someone else may not have kids in the house, and they're isolated and lonely, and they're typically extroverts and like to be around people and get energy from people, right? And all of us are fighting our own things right now. And it is hard. And faith is not a tool, again, to make you feel bad about feeling bad. It's okay. It's hard. It's not easy to accept the desert when we're the ones in the story. It's easy for us to look at Israelites and pass judgment on them. But maybe we can keep our eyes open during this time. Maybe we can keep our eyes open to try to identify those mistakes that the Israelites made and make sure that we're not making them. We can try to be in tune with the idea that it's easy for us to quickly forget what God has already done. Everything that's happened before this, right? All the ways God has been faithful in our own life. It's going to be easy for us to blame. It's going to be easy for us to launch into these conspiracy theories that make us the victim and blame someone else and just allow us to kind of stew in that. Let's not do that. And it's easy for us to romanticize life as it was 3 weeks ago. Truth is, most of you weren't 100% gloriously happy 3 weeks ago. And the truth is that this time in the desert is probably going to help you, if you're open to it, will probably help you have better life after this whole COVID thing is done than you were leading previously. There's probably some stuff that needs to go away. And we don't need to love the demons we know more than the salvation we need. All right, I've been talking longer than I planned on it. We're going to spend a couple more weeks doing this, talking about the desert and what happens here. And I think the next couple weeks what we're probably going to do is talk about some of the ways that God reformed the people, helped to purge these kind of mistakes that we make. And so we're going to talk about Sabbath, and we're going to talk about manna in the next couple weeks. And so we'll get to those. But for now, let's pray to see this desert from God's perspective, to kind of step outside of it, look down, and see the larger story. Let's not fondly remember things we shouldn't fondly remember. Let's not buy into the stories that scapegoat. Let's not forget what God has done. God is with us. God is in the midst of doing good things. And so let's keep our eyes open to that. Look for ways that God might be saving us from the demons we know, and towards the life that we need. I love you guys. I wish we could see each other in person. Let's spend some time over the next few weeks finding creative ways to keep up with each other. Reach out, send a text, set up a FaceTime, make sure everyone's doing okay. And we'll keep moving through this thing together, and hopefully on the other side of it, we'll find ourselves more fully formed into the people God intends us to be. All right. Love you guys. Peace be with you. And we'll talk again soon.